the same feature in the 1970s. So they thought that I might be able to provide them with some evidence to overturn this patent. But ultimately they decided it was easier just to take the feature out. Well, at least I know that I've had one patentable idea in my life. So they took this feature out. Well, if you take one feature out, maybe the users will still think your program is good enough to use. But after you've taken out 10 or 50 different features, the users are likely to say, this program is no good, I can't use it. And that's where you end up. And sometimes a patent is so broad that it bars an entire field. The entire field of public key encryption was covered in the US by one very broad patent until 1997, which means that until then, in the US, you basically couldn't do public key encryption. An entire area of computing off limits. So, sometimes you can avoid the patent, sometimes you can't, and sometimes you can, but the damage this does eventually makes your program useless. What about the second option, to get a license for the patent? Well, the patent holder doesn't have to offer you a license. The patent holder can say, I'm shutting you down. You're not allowed to make these things. And this does happen. I got a letter once from somebody whose family business was making casino games using computers. And he was threatened with a lawsuit by somebody who had a patent in the field. He sent me the patent asking, can you give me any advice or help? The patent covered having a network with multiple computers on it, and each computer implemented more than one different kind of game and was capable of displaying more than one game session at a time. That's it. I am sure that quite a number of computer labs in the 1980s set up a network of workstations and put a few multiplayer games on them. And these workstations had some kind of window system so that they could display more than one game session at a time. And they were doing the exact thing that whoever it is patented. And they didn't think that they had invented anything. But the patent office thinks that if somebody else did something once and you do it multiple times, that that's an invention. That's where their standard is. So I wouldn't assume that these patents are legally invalid if the court looks at them. This is where the patent system draws the line. They call that an invention. We call it obvious. But their definition is the patented idea has to be new, useful, and unobvious. What they mean is unobvious to somebody with an IQ of 80. So, there was no advice I could give him, and eventually he had to close his business because he had no way to fight back against this threat. However, most patent holders will give you the chance to get a license, but you'll have to pay a lot for it. The natural order recalculation patent holder was offering licenses for a fee of 5% of the selling price of a spreadsheet. Now, maybe your business could get by after signing that license. But what if there are 20 different patents on 20 different ideas in your spreadsheet, and each of them wants 5%? And then what happens when patent holder number 21 comes along? Well, that's a purely artificial scenario. People in business told me that two or three such licenses would be enough to make your business fail. you'd never get anywhere near 20 of them. Now, so getting a license for a patent is usually possible but painful. However, for certain software developers, it's usually painless. These are the global mega corporations. You see, they have lots of patents, and they use them to make everybody else cross-license with them. IBM published an article in Think Magazine, issue number 5, 1990, about IBM's patent portfolio. It said that IBM got two kinds of benefit from its 9,000 active U.S. patents. One benefit was collecting money, but the big benefit was getting access to the patents of others through cross-licensing. Yes? Let me know when you're finished. Can anyone figure out what that code means? I hope it's not patented. Then you won't get sued. Oh, which reminds me that Bill Gates just got a patent on a method for some kind of computerized system for turning lights on and off. So, I read about that a few days ago. So the IBM uses its patents to make everybody else license their patents to IBM, and usually what they get in exchange is not money, it's just a patent license from IBM. So the result is IBM can use all the ideas. IBM avoids the harm of the patent system and is left with only the benefit. But we can measure the size of the harm that IBM avoids. And that's interesting. You see, the patent system has been compared to a time-consuming lottery. Those are the words of The Economist. And the experience of any small business with the patent system is, to a large extent, controlled by chance. But IBM is so big that it can measure the average. And so it's very useful to measure the size of the benefit and the harm that IBM would experience. Except, the article said that they estimated that the second benefit, the benefit of cross-licensing, was an order of magnitude greater than the money that they collected. 10 times is their estimate. And what is this benefit of cross-licensing? That's a measure of the amount of harm that the patents of others would have done to IBM, except that IBM avoids it through cross-licensing. So if it were not for cross-licensing, the harm that IBM would have is 10 times the benefit. IBM avoids the harm and gets only the benefits. But you can't avoid the harm because you can't get 9,000 patents to do it. IBM can make everybody cross-license because it has 9,000 patents. Lots of small companies are trying to get a few patents, thinking maybe we can fight back with this. But it usually doesn't work. See, the problem is that each patent points in a certain direction. If I have two patents, and one points there, and one points there, and somebody over there points a patent at me, my patents are no deterrent, because they don't point at him. IBM has 9,000 patents. IBM has a patent pointing anywhere. No matter where somebody is, if he points at IBM, points a patent at IBM, IBM has some patents pointing back. IBM can always deter these attacks using its own patent weapons. But the small company with a small number of patents usually can't do this. What they can do is, after they said that they needed these patents to defend themselves, they can then become opportunistic aggressors. You know, maybe my patent pointing in this direction doesn't help me when he attacks me, but I can attack him, and he can't do anything to stop me. So this is what happens. They say to the employees, get us some patents, we need them to defend ourselves. But they don't put anything in the contract promising, binding themselves to use these patents only for defense. So a few years later, they can just conveniently forget what they said and use the same patents for aggression against somebody else. Now, there is a myth about the patent system, which now I can show you is false. So let me now explain this myth. It's the myth that patents, quote, protect, unquote, the, quote, small inventor, unquote. It's based on a scenario, which I will now describe. The scenario is that there is a brilliant designer of whatever who has spent years developing a better way to make whatever. And now he wants to go into business to produce them. And his business will be a great success, except for one thing. The big companies will immediately start competing with him. They will take all the business away, and his business will fail specifically because of that. And then he'll starve. And isn't this a tragedy? Now, this scenario is unlikely at every point. First of all, most of the time, people working and having ideas in a high-tech field are not working in isolation. They have these ideas from working with other people. Second thing is, most of them don't know how to run a business. So if they try to run a business, it's going to fail anyway. In the US, over 90% of new businesses fail in a few years. So to assume that his business would have been a success is a mistake. However, if it is a success, it's because this guy, unusually, has skill in running a business as well as skill in this field. And if he has skill in running a business, then he will not try to, that he will try to do it in a way that takes advantage of the capabilities of a small company, rather than trying to do it in a way that, in an area where the big companies have the advantages. After all, not all small companies fail. If a small company is managed in the right way and takes advantage of its capabilities, it can succeed. So he's not doomed to failure, even if he does have some larger competitors. But suppose the business fails, which it probably will, because he probably doesn't have business talent. If he's that smart in a high-tech field, he can probably get a job. So he's not really likely to starve. So this scenario is unlikely. It's rare. And we shouldn't make important decisions, such as about software idea patents, based on these rare situations, ignoring the common, usual case. But nonetheless, let's look at this scenario and see what the patent system does. Because here's what they argue. They say patents will protect him, quote unquote. This genius can get a patent. And then when IBM tries to compete with him, he says, IBM, you can't compete with me because I've got this patent. And it says you're not allowed. And according to this myth, IBM then goes away and gives up. But here's what really happens. IBM uses its 9,000 active US patents to make this guy cross-license. IBM says, oh, you have a patent, how nice. We have this one, and this one, and this one, and this one, and this one that apply to other parts of your product. And if you think you can afford to go to court against us for all those, we'll dig up some more. So why don't you just sign a cross-license agreement with us, and then we can shake hands and go away friends.